You've been listening to 93.3 WNRB Wausau. Real life, real learning, real radio. Coming up next, a show the NSA always loves to listen into and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning, the views expressed on The Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's host.
This is my boomstick!
The Mike Cannon Show.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Welcome again to the good, the bad, and the ugly, also known as the Mike Cannon Indie Media Radio Show for Central Wisconsin. Before we start, a quick fact. 35% of the Americans polled think that the avian flu or bird flu epidemic is a major threat to the United States. Well, here's a group of chickens I wish would come down with that flu. And I start out my show with this week dedicating a little ditty to Ann Coulter, Jack Ryan, and all their ilk. Keep clucking away.
Well, my son asked me today, is this another Vietnam? I said, son, you know, it's well, it's no, it's go ask your mom. It brought back such precious memories of my days in business school, my favorite stool. Then my wife said, hey, I'm worried, 'cause they're starting to deploy. I said, honey, don't be silly, we'll send someone else's boy. 'Cause we all make sacrifices, and in a war, that's what the poor people are for. I say, fight on for freedom's sake, long as I don't shake and bake.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. A loyal armchair jock. Let's check that Lockheed stock. I didn't walk the walk, but I can talk the talk. Walk, 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 walk. Just because you might have seen some action there on the front line, don't insult the guys who serve their country here on the back nine. I was gung-ho for gun-and-ho. Yes, I just had other priorities, like feeling more at ease. I say, bomb them to hell, but I'd rather not be Kentucky Fried.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. Watch while I bring the mock. Receipt to all Iraq. I didn't walk the walk, but I could talk the talk.
Bawk, 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 bawk.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, I'll tell you part. The chicken crossed the road to join the Texas Air National Guard. Roll call.
Bush.
Ah.
Rove.
Ah.
Card.
Ah.
Ashcroft.
Ah.
Rumsfeld.
Ah.
Pearl.
Ah.
Wolfowitz.
Ah.
Cheney.
Go fuck yourself.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. Watch while I bring the mock. Receipt to all Iraq. I didn't walk the walk, but I can talk the talk.
Bawk, 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 bawk.
Let me make this perfectly clear. The buck stops here.
Boy, a big old group of chicken hawks out there that should be joined on a roll call, huh? It's the only roll call they'll ever find themselves in. You see, in the military, you have to do a lot of roll calls. And Cheney, Shawnee, Coulter, Rushy, Pat, Pearl, Wolfowitz, that can go on and on. We'll never know what it means to stand up and to be counted in any real sense of the word. These chicken hawks that are now beating the drums of war again, but asking everyone except themselves to the Totentanz, or Dance of Death. I wonder if this big war in the Middle East keeps on going the way it is going. I wonder if the Bush girls will now sign and raise their right hand. Nah, they can raise the flag, raise the dogs of war, but never raise their right hand and swear an oath. They had more important things to do, after all. Enough of the rants, and back to the Mike Cannon Show. Each week on your only alternative media radio show in central Wisconsin, we try to bring you voices that do not come from the corporate, out-of-state-owned media outlets like the All Hate AM radio station here in town. We bring you opinions from other not-for-profit and or community radio stations from around the country and the world, giving you alternative views and news from around the world, not filtered for your approval, your patriotism, or pandering to your fears like the bird flu, but will bring you the unfiltered reality. Speaking of unfiltered reality, each week, the first hour, I give you a great news and review segment from the folks at Eat the State, produced out of Seattle, Washington. Here is Eat the State, and as always, thanks for tuning in to this indie media radio program, The Mike Cannon Show.
It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios, once again, Jav Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, a ton to cover, so let's just dive right in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and we're going to kind of reverse the order. We're going to start with international this week, since that has been so prominent.
Yeah, and I'm actually heading out of town the next 3 weeks, hopefully. If we can figure out how to make it work, I'll be doing this over the phone from various parts of the U.S., and hopefully we won't be in World War III by then. But the situation in the Middle East right now is really, really dangerous. And it's not just a question of Israel invading Lebanon after the attack by Hezbollah on Wednesday. And, you know, I have to say, the media coverage in this country of what has been going on with Gaza and Hamas, Israel, and now with Hezbollah and Lebanon, and the potential involvement of Syria and Iran, has been horrible. It really has. The situation in the south and the situation in the north are not unrelated, obviously, but they are not identical. It's not simply a matter of terrorists in the south, terrorists in the north. Hamas and Hezbollah are very different organizations, different histories. One's Sunni, one's Shiite. They don't particularly cooperate with one another in a lot of ways. You know, there's different histories, et cetera, you know, different goals of the two organizations. And, you know, the context of the kidnapping of Israeli soldiers by Palestinians a couple of weeks ago, which is what has touched off this latest escalation, was a direct response to 2 weeks of Israeli shelling of Gaza and 6 months of Gaza being under siege, which hadn't been widely reported. And we talked on this show about the humanitarian crisis, which is still deepening in Gaza. There's still a lot going on there. Hezbollah was pretty much an unprovoked attack. You know, what Hezbollah is saying is that it was done in solidarity with what the Palestinians in Gaza are going through. But there's other agendas going on there also. Hezbollah has its own agenda in terms of the plans of the Lebanese government to try and disarm it. Iranian missiles were used in the attack on Haifa a couple of days ago, and so Iran and probably also Syria are implicated in this. And the real danger right now is that Israel will launch a direct strike on either Syria or, more likely, Iran. And if either of those happens, one is the same as the other, because Syria and Iran signed a mutual defense pact earlier this year saying that if one is attacked, the other will come to its defense. Iran was saying just a day ago that if there is an attack on Syria, there will be a swift and severe retaliation by Iran. And of course, if Israel attacks, the assumption in Tehran, the assumption in the entire Muslim world, if not the entire rest of the world, is that the United States will be complicit in that, because Israel would not do something that is such an escalation. In fact, they probably didn't even launch the attack on Lebanon without at minimum a green light from Washington. In the case of an attack on Iran, it would more likely be with the active military cooperation of Washington. The United States has soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq and ships in the Persian Gulf and oil that this country relies on, the global economy relies on in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. And all of those are open to retribution by Iran. And the whole thing could very, very easily and plausibly in the next few days result in the United States being at war with Iran. And from there it can spread. It's an incredibly dangerous situation. And you have to ask yourself in all this, what is George Bush doing? Right now he's at the G8 in Russia. He got there a day early to talk with Vladimir Putin, and hopefully, they haven't really said a whole lot publicly, but hopefully, Putin is one of the few people who has a decent amount of leverage over the Iranian mullahs due to their fairly close financial ties and the Russians being willing to negotiate with them over the whole uranium enrichment question. Russia cut a pipeline deal with Iran that was not widely reported in the U.S. a couple weeks ago to build a pipeline that would service India and Pakistan and the western parts of Asia, cutting the dependence of much of Asia on the United States for some of those things. There's all that tension there. China, of course, has oil deals with Iran as well, so they're also involved in all this. It's an incredibly messy situation. Hopefully, Putin can get the Iranian mullahs to back down. Bush can get the leaders of Israel to back down. But if you take Bush's history, and so far he's spent 5 years allowing Israel to do pretty much whatever it wants to with the Palestinians, and if you take the public statements of Bush and of White House officials and John Bolton at the UN, the U.S. is really the only international player out there that is defending Israel in all this. The UN Security Council, before all this started happening on Wednesday, the United States had actually vetoed a Security Council resolution condemning Israel for what it was doing to the Palestinians in Gaza. What it is doing in Gaza and what it is now doing to the Lebanese, who are very much caught in the crossfire of all this, they're war crimes. They're collective punishment of civilians that are caught in the middle. It's bombing and destruction of civilian infrastructure, and an awful lot of civilian deaths. Israel certainly has a right to defend itself, and it's given at this point that IDF ground forces will move back into southern Lebanon. They haven't been there in 6 years. At the same time, the Israeli actions have also pretty much cut the Lebanese government off at the knees. This is the same Lebanese government that was supposedly the triumph of Bush's policy of pushing democracy in the Middle East just last year. They're probably the government of Lebanon that's the first one in decades that would have any degree of sympathy to the concerns of the Israeli government, but Israel didn't even give them a chance or give them the assets to try and rein in Hezbollah themselves. They just declared war on Lebanon and blockaded it and started bombing the heck out of it. Very, very dangerous situation. And for people who are concerned about the involvement of this country in a major regional conflagration, we need to make our voices heard. People on Capitol Hill need to make their voices heard. Bush cannot stand by and simply watch Israel involve the United States in a major war to the extent that we're not already involved. He has to be an active leader on this, and there's a question of whether he wants to do that, if he does, whether he has the diplomatic chops to do it, and even if he does that, whether it would be successful or whether the Israelis would go ahead and do what they feel they need to do. So it's a very, very treacherous situation.
All right. Moving along, that is actually, for the first time in a long time, taken Iraq off the front page for a while.
Yeah, and it's in a week when Iraq really shouldn't have been off the front page. An awful lot is happening in Iraq right now as well. Baghdad has just gone to Hades in a handbasket in the last week. I mean, it was already very, very bad, but the first 4 days of this week, over 160 people, at least, that are known, were killed in sectarian violence. West Baghdad is in an open state of civil war at this point between Sunni and Shiite militias. Gun battles raging everywhere. The exodus of people from Iraq by any means possible, and particularly from Baghdad, is just incredible. You know, buses, planes, by foot, any way that people can get out of Iraq right now, they're trying to get out. It is an absolute disaster in the making. We're finally seeing the low-grade civil war that's been going on, you know, really for nearly a year now, between Shiites and Sunnis, just spin completely out of control. And this, of course, you know, after Zarqawi was killed, and after we had our supposed national unity government in Iraq. In fact, in the time since that national unity government that was supposed to guarantee peace in Iraq was formed 6 weeks ago, we've had at least 1,600 deaths in civilians in the Baghdad area that people know of. Meanwhile, we have General Casey saying that this is all the fault of Al Qaeda and Shiites that are launching revenge attacks in response to Al Qaeda. So Al Qaeda is prompting all this. It's just absolutely clueless. You know, the United States military is not that stupid. They have to know what's going on. So, I mean, what Casey is doing and what the White House is doing is a more extreme version of what they've been doing for the last 3 years, which is lying to the American public about what's going on in Iraq. And it's not a time for trying to sugarcoat what's happening there. The United States has very few options at this point, but the Iraqi government is helpless at this point to prevent it. Their security forces and police forces have never been more than extensions of the sectarian militias that have heavily infiltrated them and used their uniforms and used their weapons to carry out their own agendas. And the American forces are basically standing by and not getting involved. We've been hearing the argument for years that, well, the American troops can't leave because if they leave, there'll be civil war. Well, now we have the civil war, and the American troops have done nothing to prevent it. In fact, the destruction that they've brought has played a large part in helping to bring this on. So it's a very bad situation in Iraq right now as well. And of course, if Iran gets involved in any kind of a regional conflict, their ability to turn around and launch attacks within Iraq just makes the whole situation even worse. So it's just not good. And all of this comes back to George Bush. It comes back to his decision to invade Iraq. It comes back to his decision in the war on terror to prioritize invading Iraq over trying to deal with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and instead abandoning even the semi-ludicrous roadmap to peace and just giving first Sharon and now Omar a free hand to do whatever they want with the Palestinians. And it comes from the very confrontational policy that the United States has pursued vis-a-vis Iran, refusing to negotiate, trying to isolate it diplomatically. Instead, what the Iranians are seemingly attempting to do right now is isolate Israel and the United States diplomatically. Every country at the G8, all of these being allies of the United States, has condemned Israel's disproportionate use of force in Lebanon this week, except the United States. They're trying to come out with a joint communique out of the G8, and it's basically the U.S. against everybody else in terms of deciding what to say. The U.S. is really isolated in its approach on this because, Israel is violating all norms of international law and the Geneva Conventions and the rules of engagement in war, with what it is doing in targeting civilians and defending itself against Hezbollah. Beyond that, the United States has created a situation in Iraq that is just an absolute nightmare. There are no easy solutions at this point.
All right, moving along, there was the bombings in India this week.
Yes, and the media coverage of that was very interesting. Of course, this was a day or two before everything blew up in the Middle East, so to speak. But it was very interesting in that the terrorist acts in India as a result of the conflict in Kashmir have been going on for decades. most notoriously in 2001 when the same group that's now being blamed for the bombings in Mumbai this week stormed the Indian Parliament in New Delhi. There was a major bombing in 1993 in Mumbai that killed 200 some people at the stock exchange there. This one wasn't quite as big, but it was the first major attack in Mumbai in the 13 years since. You know, in 1993 when that happened, the story was, I didn't go back in the microfiche and check, but my guess is that attack was probably, you know, buried on page A13 somewhere, you know, under the headline, "People in the far corner of their world die." And, you know, this week it was front page news because we're so sensitive to the idea of terrorism and particularly Islamic terrorism. But this is very specific to the Indian-Pakistani conflict. But once again, the United States cut a deal with India this year, taking what were its unauthorized nuclear tests from last decade, which at the time we launched economic sanctions against both India and Pakistan for becoming nuclear powers. And we basically guaranteed India more access to nuclear weapons with that deal. So once again, the Muslim world is going to see this as the United States ganging up against the Muslims and taking sides in that conflict. So this also involves the United States. And of course, since 1993, the U.S. is much more closely tied with India in terms of its economy. You know, if you have a service call right now, you're talking to somebody in Mumbai or you know, Hyderabad or one of those cities. In fact, we talked to somebody from Mumbai last night while we were trying to get our computer help. Again, it's just a situation where the United States has become and its allies have become targets all over the world. You know, it really is going to have to come to a point, hopefully fairly soon, where we're starting to make some fairly fundamental questioning of the priorities of the United States foreign policy and how we prosecute the so-called war on terror.
Yeah, it's unfortunate we really don't have enough time to go into it, but within a week of each other of the North Korean missile tests, there was missile tests in India, and of course North Korean ones receiving a lot of coverage in the press, and the India test pretty much was almost silent.
Yes,
except for a single article.
So that's absolutely right.
All right. Let's move along to the elections in Mexico.
Yeah, and that that also is not a done deal, even though the Electoral Oversight Board in Mexico that declares winners declared the conservative candidate Calderon a winner on Thursday. But that is contested. There still has to be another 7-judge panel that has the authority to order a full recount of all the ballots, which is what the other candidate, the leftist candidate Lopez Obrador, is asking for. There will be a large rally in Mexico City tomorrow from his supporters, and there's just widespread belief, and we're going to have an article in next week's Eat the State from Troy Skills, our former editor who lives in Oaxaca these days, where there's widespread belief among Mexicans that fraud was committed. There's a lot of evidence to support it, and of course there's a long history of it in Mexico, and there's also a lot of evidence that the Bush administration actively intervened on behalf of the conservative candidate, and this close an election that was one of the margins of victory. So, you know, again, implications for how the United States is perceived in another country that's very important to our foreign policy.
All right. Well, speaking of trade policy, there were demonstrations this week in South Korea?
Yeah, in Seoul, something like 70,000 people, according to estimates, marched as the United States and South Korea negotiators were sitting down trying to negotiate a free trade deal that you've heard nothing about in this country. Also this week, and one of the other things that Bush and Putin were talking about in Putin's rapidly developing police state of Russia before the G8 conference, was that they weren't just talking about the Middle East. They were also talking about the World Trade Organization, which Russia is not yet a member of. In fact, it's the only industrialized country in the world that is not. You know, every other country in the WTO has agreed to Russia's admittance, but the United States has not. And why has the United States not agreed to Russia? Because the United States is essentially blackmailing Russia. They will not agree. They will not sign off on Russia's admission to it and get it past Congress, which has to approve it. The United States has enough votes in the WTO to veto the admission of Russia, unless Russia agrees to a certain quota of U.S. Farm products that it will bring in. In other words, what the United States is trying to do is underwrite its own industries, which is what the WTO is, you know, supposedly dedicated to preventing, by exporting them to another country in order to allow it to be in the WTO. It's incredibly hypocritical, particularly when you consider that it was the U.S. that was pushing so hard for the rest of the international community to admit China a few years ago. And, of course, the net result of that was the massive export of jobs from the United States, particularly manufacturing jobs, that have all now settled in China, where, you know, 70% or so of our manufactured goods are now made.
All right, moving over to National, Valerie Plame Wilson
has launched a lawsuit against Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and Scooter Libby and other, this wasn't really emphasized in the report, but, quote, other unnamed senior White House officials. And that last part could get really interesting. And, you know, it wasn't so much that that this is an extension of Patrick Fitzgerald's case, that the blowing of Valerie Plame Wilson's identity as a covert CIA operative was illegal, although it almost certainly was. But it destroyed her career, for no other particular reason than political vengeance against her husband for something that her husband found that was turned out to be factual. So that lawsuit is going to extend this case a while longer, and we'll see where it goes, because the discovery attached to that could lead some places that that Fitzgerald's probe did not or has not so far.
All right. And early on in the week, it looks like the Pentagon has at least discovered part of the Geneva Conventions.
Yes, or the Bush administration has discovered part of it. Because of the Supreme Court ruling a couple weeks ago, which we talked about, the Pentagon has issued a memo saying that terrorists taken prisoner in the war on terror have to be treated under the Geneva Conventions. Now, that's all well and good for military facilities, but for CIA facilities and, you know, for the secret prison camps that we now know exist in Eastern Europe and other parts of the world, and for the case of prisoners that are taken by the CIA or other intelligence agencies, kidnapped and shipped off to third countries that practice torture, those practices have not yet been reined in by the Bush administration to comply with the Geneva Conventions and the Supreme Court decisions. So they haven't complied fully yet. And again, you know, all this is still talk and what's been put down on paper. It won't necessarily be reflected in what happens in practice, but at least the policy is there. So it's a start.
All right. And a brief Abramoff update.
Yeah, that a couple of things. The House committee has subpoenaed Greenberg Tarig, which is the former lobby shop that Abramoff formerly worked for Abramoff's the record of Abramoff's and his employees' billings to anybody in the White House. So they are exploring Abramoff's specific lobbying ties to the White House. That could get interesting. Meantime, the Alabama Coushatta Indian tribe in Texas has sued Abramoff and Ralph Reed and Michael Scanlon, who is a convicted now former aide of Tom DeLay, and Neil Volz, who is a now convicted former aide of Congressman Bob Nye, and one of Abramoff's other lobbyist employees over, and I'll just read this as a direct quote, a fake religiously themed moral crusade in 2001 to defeat a bill in the Texas legislature that would have legalized gambling in Indian casinos. In other words, one gambling client of Abramoff's trying to prevent competition by another. And we saw these sorts of campaigns, and Ralph Reed was heavily involved in them all over the South in 2000, 2001, 2002. And now an Indian tribe is suing over it, and we'll probably see more of these.
All right. Well, the Voting Rights Act looked like it has been passed again.
Yeah, finally, it took a long time, and it was done over the objection of Republican Southern congressmen who are claiming that there isn't any discrimination in the South anymore, which, you know, I was in the South a few weeks ago, and I can promise you that there still is. And at the same time, another piece of good news besides the Voting Rights Act being passed is that the very restrictive voter ID law in Georgia that was in theory aimed at immigrants but in practice would have excluded anybody who couldn't produce truce, you know, birth certificate, that type of legal documentation in order to vote, that was thrown out as unconstitutional. So a small court victory there as well.
All right, and there are indications, if I'm correct on this, of a potential another spying scandal?
Yes. Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee quoted, and I believe it was the Christian Science Monitor, as saying that he had heard from a whistleblower that there was another unreported, and he used the word significant, White House spying program that nobody's heard about. He sent along a strongly worded letter to President Bush. The White House briefed him on it. He now says that he, the Republican chairman, is satisfied about it. But we now know that the program exists. We don't know. He's not saying whether it's domestic or international and what the scope is, but we know that there's something else out there that hasn't been reported yet.
Okay. And was it a report that came out this week that we could see why they would need these spying scandals for the new target list they came up with?
Yeah, this is an Inspector General report for the Department of Homeland Security, and there's a hilarious article in Wednesday's New York Times that runs down the tens of thousands of potential terrorist targets in the United States that is included in the DHS home database. And it's things like, you know, petting zoos and a mule ride and flea markets. It's all out of whack. The state with the most terrorist targets in the country is Indiana. Washington State has twice as many national monuments of significance as the District of Columbia. And, you know, the state of Montana has more than New York. I mean, you know, it just goes on and on and on. Read the article. It's really frightening, and it shows a lot about, number one, the way the Bush administration has used fear and the idea that anybody could be attacked at any time to really terrorize the American public, and second, how out of control the bureaucracy around the war on terror has become.
All right. Talking once again with John Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State is a volunteer publication that comes out every couple of weeks, covers local, national, international news. As I mentioned last week, and we didn't get to a number of things this week because there's so much going on in the Middle East especially, I'm going to start, and I won't do it while I'm on the road probably, but otherwise I will. I'm going to start taking the notes that I prepare for this program and putting them up on our blog, which is, you know, you go to www.eatthestate.org and click on ETS blog on the right hand side, and it'll take you right to it.
And now, the only radio commentator not addicted to illegal pain medication, nor Viagra, Mike Cannon.
That was Eat the State out of Seattle, Washington. You know, it is almost laughable how that, quote, vestige of liberal media, unquote, NPR stations have been interviewing those poor Israeli families that had some rockets fired upon them and their homes damaged, but seldom interview the Palestinian families who for years after years have been having their houses bulldozed and destroyed by IMF forces. And I especially love how they frame the whole Israeli-Middle East thing as if Israel is retaliating against the abduction of one soldier. And as if that would not have happened, then the gross massive retribution against 1.4 million Palestinians living in a small narrow Gaza Strip would not have been needed. As if the taking of one Israeli soldier allows mass retaliation against a whole 1.4 million people. As if it all boils down to that. As if the taking of a soldier at his military post is worse than the taking of dozens of civilians each night out of their homes that has been happening for weeks leading up to the abduction of this one soldier. And as corporate Main Street media likes to frame it, and I include NPR in this list, it all started with that one soldier. And ignore the fact that Israel is the number one violator of UN resolutions, three times as many in regards to the Palestinian issue as Saddam had with Iraq. Yep, Israel has over three times as many UN resolutions they violated and choose to ignore. And now the list of war crimes by Israel gets bigger and bigger, and everyone likes to keep on saying that they've been fighting for years and it'll never end. It will never end as long as the big bully keeps throwing its weight around. And as the, quote, radical, quote, saying goes, no justice, no peace. So here's my little attempt to counter the Israeli propaganda that you'll hear each week on your, quote, liberal, unquote, NPR stations here in Wisconsin. You see, at the top of the international programming each night on NPR stations, it starts out with Voice of Israel, but offers no such spot for the Palestinian voices. It's not that there is no media voices out there for Palestine, they just choose not to give them any. Now how do I know that there's news shows out there from Palestine? Glad you asked. Here's a little taste of news shows out of Palestine you'll not hear on NPR or any corporate mainstream media. That's what you get only here on your Central Wisconsin Indie Media Radio program, The Mike Cannon Show, which airs every Monday starting at 2 p.m. Here are some alternative voices from Palestine, and thanks for listening.
This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East MEA Center, www.imemc.org, for the week of July 7th through July 14th, 2006.
Israel continues to bomb Gaza, bringing the number of dead in this invasion to at least 80. Rocket fires over the annexation wall from Jenin to Israel. And Israel begins an invasion of Lebanon that leaves 46 civilians dead in the first 24 hours. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned.
We'll start off the program with highlights from the Palestinian Center for Human Rights weekly report on Israeli attacks against Palestinians. From June 29th through July 12th, the Israeli army killed 88 Palestinians, more than half of them civilians, and around 34 resistance fighters who were killed in a non-combatant situation. In addition, the Israeli army injured 345 Palestinians. The army fired 110 missiles, hundreds of artillery shells at the Gaza Strip. Targets included the Palestinian Minister of Interior, the Office of the Palestinian Prime Minister, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and a number of educational institutions, as well as Gaza's only power plant and three main bridges. The army also destroyed hundreds of acres of farmland and demolished several houses. The Israeli army invaded and reoccupied areas in the Gaza Strip, including Gaza International Airport. The army also prevented Palestinian ambulances from transporting patients to hospitals, including pregnant women.
Israel continued to impose a closure on Gaza's commercial crossings, and people now suffer from a severe shortage of fuel, food, and medical supplies. Many communities can no longer run their sewage disposal facilities, and hospitals are barely able to fuel their ambulances. Yesterday, Israeli troops seized control on Gaza's main road, erected a checkpoint in the middle, and barred civilians from using it. The airstrikes this week targeted three Palestinian families. In Al-Shuja'iyah neighborhood, an Israeli missile killed a mother, her 20-year-old son, and her 6-year-old daughter. A second airstrike killed an 18-year-old boy. In a third incident, the army dropped a one-ton bomb on a three-story apartment building, killing nine members of the Al-Salamiyah family. And in the West Bank, Israeli troops conducted at least 47 military incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank, arresting 67 civilians, including three children and a woman. They also broke into at least six civilian institutions, claiming they were run by Hamas. Israel has tightened its siege on the West Bank, continuing to divide it between north and south and restricting movement in and out of major cities, including Nablus, Ramallah, and Tulkarm.
And now, back to Gaza. While Israel insists that, quote, Operation Summer Rains, end quote, is aimed at releasing the captured Israeli soldier and stopping the firing of homemade Qassam shells, the attacks have focused on civilian infrastructure. Bridges, roads, educational buildings, and civilian neighborhoods have been the target of the ongoing bombing. Over the weekend, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert rejected Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh's call for an immediate and mutual ceasefire. In exchange for the cessation of launching Qassam shells into Israel, Haniyeh demanded the unconditional release of recently kidnapped Palestinian ministers and lawmakers, a lifting of economic sanctions, and the reopening of Gaza's border crossings. The Prime Minister said negotiations over the captured soldier could then take place.
Israel rejected the demands and continued its invasion. An Israeli warplane bombed the Palestinian Foreign Ministry in Gaza, leaving 10 injured, mostly in neighboring houses. Tahar Nunu, a spokesman from the Palestinian Foreign Ministry, called the attack state terrorism. The attack came less than 2 weeks after an Israeli airstrike targeted the Palestinian Ministry of the Interior. Meanwhile, just outside of Rafah, 5 of the other 4,000 Palestinians stranded at the Rafah border crossing have died since Israel closed the borders 2 weeks ago and barred international observers, required by law to be present at the crossing, to return. They include two women aged 19 and 27, an 18-month-old baby, 15-year-old boy, and a 78-year-old man.
Palestinian medics are now saying that patients at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City and some bodies at the local morgue have unusual burns, raising concerns that Israel was using chemical weapons in its attacks on the Gaza Strip. Dr. Juma Al-Saqqa, the PR person in the hospital, says,
When the shrapnel hits the body, it causes a very strong burn that destroys the tissues around the bones. When those shrapnels enter the body, it burns and destroys internal organs like the liver, kidneys, and the spleen, and other organs, and makes saving the wounded almost impossible. As a surgeon, I have seen thousands of wounds during the intifada, but nothing was like this weapon.
The Prime Minister of Health has asked for the international communities and other human rights organizations to send medical teams to examine the injured and to verify its reports of use of these banned weapons. Yet Dr. Asaka stated that, quote, no one has lifted a finger, quote. The medical international community remains silent. The United States has recently vetoed a UN resolution condemning the Israeli attacks against the Palestinian population in the Gaza Strip.
Around 1:30 this Friday afternoon, a peaceful gathering of around 100 people marched from Al-Khadr Mosque east of the West Bank city of Bethlehem to the site of construction of the separation wall in an example of peaceful, non-violent protest. The protest march was met by 3 IDF jeeps and around 20 soldiers who blocked the path and prevented the protest from moving further. Organizers and participants enjoyed a friendly and unthreatening atmosphere during the protest, which was well attended by villagers, international observers, and Israeli activists. Sami, one of the organizers,
went okay so far because we just committed to the non-violence ways to protest and to give a message. And this is the purpose of the whole campaign. Step by step, we become more and more. We succeed to send a message into two directions. Inside the Palestinian community and outside it.
After almost an hour, the demonstration ended peacefully with only one arrest, that of an Israeli activist and film producer known as Ranan. He is expected to be released later today. Today in Bilayan, as 150 villagers, Israelis and internationals, gathered around the village center, there was a special excitement in the air. Mansour Mansour and his wife decided to celebrate their union with the wedding at the gate in Bilayan in front of the barbed wire. Soldiers faced the demonstrators with excessive force and injured 20 demonstrators, 3 of which were injured by rubber bullets, many of them beaten by the soldiers. Among those injured were internationals and Israelis. Azza, an ISM activist, described the demonstration.
Today's demonstration, it was the usual demonstration. It was also a wedding, the wedding party of Mansour Mansour and Iman Mansour. The intention was to hold the wedding party in the Bilayan outpost. As usual, they didn't let us pass. What happened was when we came to the gate, they were more violent than usual. There were several people injured, including one of the soldiers, actually. Mohammed Mansour, several international activists were beaten severely. One of the Israeli activists, Yossi, he's the most seriously injured.
The new Commissioner General of the United Nations Relief and Work Agency for Palestinian Refugees in the Far East visited the Gaza Strip this Wednesday. Karen Abu Zaid visited Gaza's power plant, which Israel bombed, leaving over 750,000 residents without electricity. Abu Zaid also visited the northern Gaza Strip, including the badly damaged Al-Atara area, and expressed sorrow over the bad living conditions Palestinians face on a daily basis. UNRWA created a $170 million emergency relief program to help curb the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. The United Nations World Food Program has also delivered an urgent food aid of $1.4 million donation from Japan to the Palestinians. Abu Zaid called on the international community to do its part. The residents are living without water or electricity for more than 2 weeks, she stated. These conditions will spread disease. These crimes against the Palestinian people must end, and aid should be immediately provided to the Palestinians.
Six Israeli human rights organizations filed a petition to the Israeli High Court of Justice demanding that Israel permit the access of essential supplies into the Gaza Strip. A spokesperson from the organization says Israelis' withholding of food, fuel, and needed equipment amounts to collective punishment and is a violation of international law. These organizations also called for the Israeli army to stop attacking civilian targets such as bridges and power stations. Dr. Shabbatai Gold, spokesperson of Physicians for Human Rights Israel, spokesperson of the Israeli human rights groups.
We have now yesterday filed a petition about the Karni crossings and the Kisufim crossings into the Gaza Strip because necessary supplies for the community in Gaza, such as food supplies, basic humanitarian needs such as medicine, are not being able to get into Gaza right now because of the closure basically around the Gaza Strip. There's also a major problem of electricity because the Israelis have bombed the power plants in Gaza.
To alleviate the fuel crisis in the Gaza Strip, the European Union started delivering emergency fuel supplies to hospitals that switched to generator power after the main electricity plant in the Strip was hit by the Israeli warplanes 2 weeks earlier. This aid will be the first to be sent through a temporary funding mechanism set up and approved by the Quartet Community for Peace in the Middle East, which includes the European Union, the United States, the United Nations, and Russia. A second delivery of aid will be issued within the next few days to unpaid Palestinian health employees who have not received their paychecks. Some of them were paid a month earlier. This aid will not cover the paychecks of those people.
The Palestinian resistance fired a homemade shell into Israel from Jenin this week. Israeli forces then invaded the city. The shell fell in an empty area, causing no casualties or damage. Abu al-Sa'id of Islamic Jihad, who claimed responsibility for the launch, said it was a response to Israeli attacks against the Palestinian people.
It is not a surprise that Palestinian factions will respond. The Zionist enemy commits crimes against our people on a daily basis in a systematic manner. They targeted hospitals, universities, and the latest in Jenin was when the special units attacked awake in the city and killed two. Therefore, we hold the Israeli army responsible for all of this.
This was the first successful launch in projectiles from the West Bank over the annexation wall to Israeli targets, which brings into question how much of the security the wall really provides. A previous launching attempt from Tul Karim failed 2 weeks ago.
And now we go to Lebanon, where at least 46 civilians have been killed and 103 injured in Israel's invasion of the country. The most brutal attack since Israel bombed the UN compound in Lebanon in 1996, killing 200 civilians who had sought shelter there. The invasion follows a raid in which Hezbollah, the Lebanese Shiite resistance group that forced Israel out of Lebanon after a 22-year occupation, captured two Israeli soldiers and killed eight. The two captured prisoners are bargaining chips to secure the release of some of the 9,000 Palestinians and Lebanese being held illegally in Israeli jails.
Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert called the raid an act of war and promised a very painful response, adding that nowhere in Lebanon was safe. Israel's Chief of Staff, Dan Halutz, threatened to turn back the clock in Lebanon by 20 years to the time of the Lebanese Civil War in which Israel killed 20,000 mainly civilians. Israeli troops were dispatched into Lebanon land, air and sea. Within 24 hours, Israel had dropped at least 40 bombs on Lebanon. The targets include Lebanon's only international airport, the main bridge to South Lebanon, the Hezbollah TV station, two Lebanese military bases, and a community center. A family of 10 and a family of 7 also perished when Israel dropped bombs on their homes. Israel has now warned residents of Beirut's southern suburbs to evacuate or risk being caught in further bombing. The southern suburbs are home to tens of thousands of Palestinian refugees who fled to Beirut during Israel's 1978 invasion of Lebanon.
And that's just some of the news this week in Palestine. For constant updates, check out our website www.imemc.org. As always, thanks for joining us. From Occupied Bethlehem, This Week in Palestine is brought to you by Dina Awad,
Hanin Amer,
and James Brownsell.
Thank you.
And now the winner of the best Central Wisconsin community radio station as voted by us computer voices, WNRB.
Right now what you're listening to is what the industry calls low-power community radio. Actually, the, quote, industry fought tooth and nail against allowing low-power community-based stations like this WNRB from even existing. The radio and broadcast industry has a stranglehold on all the airways, and the six megacorporations would like to keep it that way. That's why when the Republican-controlled FCC met a few years ago to discuss how to reorganize the standards for media consolidation, you, the public, spoke out and said, hey, wait a minute. We want more local control radio stations, ones that will play the kind of music I want to hear and give more local news, not the pre-recorded music lists that are beamed from New York or the weather forecasts sent to us from Atlanta. We want more local options. And that's why WNRB exists now. So when the FCC and Congress received over 2 million letters in protest, the FCC relented and gave us what you're hearing now, low-power community radio. The megacorporations were not pleased, but they were able to force into legislation measures to assure their corporate profits would not be affected by restricting us, like having no radio advertising, for example. So even though we live in a free society and some person or event might want to pay for airtime, these low-power stations like WNRB can have none of that. They must get their funding sources from somewhere else. Gratefully, NTC was nice enough to offer up a lot of room and resources to bring to you this non-corporate, locally controlled, low-power community radio station you are listening to now. So how can you, the public, support this grassroots community resource, WNRB? Well, the easiest is to do what you're doing right now. Just listen to us. We, the volunteers here at WNRB, we all believe in Central Wisconsin should have a non-corporate voice in the airways wilderness. If you do too, then just listen to us. You can also help by telling your friends about the station. Or, if you're really adventurous, do what we, WNRB volunteers, are doing. Come in and do a show. And it is a lot of fun. You can produce your own shows like this one, or perhaps you have other interests that other members of the Central Wisconsin community might find enjoyable. Perhaps you always dreamt of being a DJ and spinning your own music. Well, here's your chance. Consider giving Dino, our WNRB station manager, a call and pitch a show idea to him. We still have about 15 hours a week of airtime available. No, we don't want you to fill all that time. Just pick an hour or two a week that you have free and join the fun that is the WNRB community. Again, you can contact Dino at 675-3331, extension 4035. That is 675-3331, which is the number to NTC who's hosting the station, and then dial the extension 4035 and talk to Dino. Again, thank you for listening to WNRB, Central Wisconsin Community Radio Station.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
Okay, before we get into some more pretty heavy stuff, here's a two-minute lighthearted piece regarding the death of Enron's Ken Lay. If you have any gripes, comments, or suggestions, please feel free to keep them to yourself, or even better yet, write me. I dare you. You can contact me at the show's email address, which is themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Again, that's all one word, themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. So again, till the top of the hour, we'll have some fascist stuff, this week's Iraq body count, and this two-minute fun little piece right now. And as always, thanks for tuning in to your only non-corporately controlled independent media radio program for Central Wisconsin, The Mike Cannon Show.
So, of course, all the gossip here in Houston is about our favorite son, Kenny Boy Lay.
Oh my God, they killed Kenny! You bastards!
Can I help you?
Yes, I wish to complain about the friend I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique.
Oh yes, the Kenny. What's wrong with him?
I'll tell you what's wrong with him, my lad. He's dead!
No, he's resting.
Look, asshole, I know a dead friend when I see one, and I'm looking at one right now.
No, he's not dead, he's resting. Remarkable friend, Kenny, isn't he? Great loyalty.
Loyalty doesn't enter into it, he's stone dead.
No, he's resting.
All right then, if he's resting, I'll wake him up. Hello, Kenny! I've got $10 for you, Kenny!
There, he moved.
No, he didn't, that was you hitting him.
I never.
Yes, you did.
No, he didn't.
Yes, it. What was that?
What was what?
Why, nothing, go back to bed.
What the hell's going on? Oh, it's you! All right, buddy, you stop that right now! This is our show!
Old Kenny beat the jailer, apparently the hard way. Personally, I think he accidentally got some of that Kool-Aid he was hawking to the suckers under the big Kenron tent not long ago. And I also heard today that the $41 million he pocketed, that's 41 they know about, is now safe from forfeiture. because he wasn't sentenced, therefore he wasn't convicted. And this changes the deal with all the class action suits and pension funds. Old Kenny, he never lost his touch. He was so crooked, he could still screw thousands of people just by dying.
You bastard!
Even if he couldn't take it with him, he damn sure wasn't going to give it back. But see, if I were him, I'd have faked my death outside the state of Texas, hauled ass down to that island in the Caribbean where they were going to build a pipeline or something, you know, back in the 90s. You could pull off anything with millions of dollars. Why stay in jail? But I guess, hey, he didn't think of that. You know, I wonder if they're going to cremate him.
You know, you only had one shot to make it right, to do the right thing. So listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without. What do all men with power want? More power.
Now they knew who was master and leader. Sheep, thought I.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Remorse for what? You people have done everything in the world to me. Doesn't that give me equal right? I can do anything I want to you people at any time I want to, because that's what you've done to me. If you spit in my face and smack me in the mouth and throw me in solitary confinement for nothing, what do you think's going to happen when I get out of here? Well, I haven't done enough. I might be ashamed of that for not doing enough. For not doing enough. Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people, then I would have felt better. Then I felt like I really offered society something I can, but I find more real in the world that I'm in than I do the tinsel. And the real world is the one I have to deal with every day. Believe me, if I started murdering people, there'd be none to be left.
Chemical weapons threat, terrorists, dangerous, die. In turn, murders.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
As of Monday, July 17th, 2006, 2,549 United States military personnel had died in Iraq since the start of the invasion. 18,491 United States military personnel had been wounded, over 9,000 of which had suffered grievous injuries such as amputations. 214 other coalition forces had also been killed.
Join us or die.
According to the British medical journal Lancet, over 100,000 Iraqi civilians had died since the start of the invasion.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
What do you see when you're in the dark and the demons come?
Doomsday, I'm voted out. Doomsday, I'm voted out.
You have been listening to 93.3 WNRB Wausau. Real life, real learning, real radio. Thanks for tuning in to this indie media radio program, The Mike Cannon Show. Each week we try to bring you alternative information produced out of other not-for-profit and or community radio stations from around the country and the world. This way you can hear voices and opinions not based on what the giant megacorporations want you to hear, but real information you'll hear nowhere else in central Wisconsin except each week on this indie media radio program. And now a word about this WNRB low-power, not-for-profit community radio station you are listening to now.
I have many skills.
I don't even have any good skills.
What do you mean?
You know, like nunchuck skills, bow hunting skills, computer hacking skills. Girls only want boyfriends who have great skills.
And once again, if you're interested in helping out with WNRB, the community radio station here in Wausau, Wisconsin, and developing more skills, you can contact Dino. Dino's telephone number is 675-3331, extension 4035. Again, Dino, the station manager for WNRB, his telephone number is 675-3331, extension 4035.
Now, the sort of person we're looking for is an aggressive, drunken lout with the intelligence of a 4-year-old and the sexual sophistication of a donkey.